Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it. As always, hope everybody has come through Tropical Storm Cristobal well enough, assuming it's a tropical storm. See, normally what we do on the NOLA Drink Show is, as you probably know if you regularly listen to the show, is we actually most often tape our featured interview several days before the show airs on Monday evenings, initially on radio, and then when the podcast, the full version of the show with our extended podcast-only content, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks, comes out, usually on the Tuesday or Wednesday thereafter. So, you know, it's a handful of days before with the featured interview. And this was no exception. We actually taped it on this past Thursday. But normally when I record this opening segment, as well as some of the bits of the podcast, I usually do it on Monday morning before the show airs 7 p.m. on the radio. If that's where you're listening, you already know that. But in this case, because we were concerned about Tropical Storm Cristobal and potentially losing power here at our place, because I record this portion of the show typically, or whenever I do phone interviews, in my home studio, I was afraid we might lose power on Sunday or Monday, and then I would not be able to upload the show to the radio station. So I'm just telling you all this because give you a little behind-the-scenes look at the NOLA Drink Show. Really exciting, right? But also just to let you know that, yes, we're taping this. This is actually on Saturday. We're expecting the storm primarily tomorrow on Sunday, and at the earliest, you're hearing this on Monday evening. So most likely, by the time you're hearing this on the radio, or certainly by the time you're hearing the podcast, Cristobal is long gone. So I don't know what to tell you it's going to be when you're hearing this, but I hope, again, everyone has come through this okay. Got a really good show coming up for you here today. We're going to be chatting with Jennifer Kelly, who is the executive director of the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. And we talk about some interesting and important stuff about what the foundation does, some of the effects that the coronavirus pandemic has had on the hospitality industry, obviously with a particularly in a Louisiana, New Orleans sort of lens. As you know, it's our biggest economic driver in New Orleans, one of the biggest economic drivers in the state. And many, many people depend on it for jobs, obviously. So we talk about some of the good work that they're doing to help support the situation and just some of the ramifications and some of the dynamics and some of the realities that are currently happening. So really interesting stuff. We tape it at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. We actually got out and about, did a show there. And I would encourage you to go check out the Nitty Grits Media Podcast Network there through the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and the National Food and Beverage Foundation, because you can find this show here. We tape the show. We were socially distant like we were supposed to be. I have long cables that allow us to do that when I record the show. So really interesting interview with Jennifer. Friends, importantly, I want to say something. I think if you listen to the show, you probably already know how we come down on a given social issues and social conditions in the country. It's pretty obvious, I think, what I'm going to say, but I do want to say it anyway. You know, Black Lives Matter. And here at the NOLA Drink Show, we stand in solidarity with our friends, our neighbors, and our fellow citizens in the African-American community, all persons of color, and anyone in marginalized communities in this country and around the world. We hope to stand. We will continue to talk about this issue. The hard work is really in front of us. We can't go silent. We can't just do a social media post and move on. This will be an ongoing part of the conversation here on the show, here and there on certain episodes. As we move forward, we will be addressing it, obviously, with a lens of food, drink, and culture, but that's pretty easy to do and something we have done, and will continue to do. It is important to me, it is important to everybody connected to the NOLA Drink Show, that we stand as an ally and hopefully, ideally, better yet, an advocate for the African-American community and other marginalized communities. And I know we're all trying to find that Martin Luther King quote and share it with everybody, but obviously so many powerful things were said by Dr. Martin Luther King. And before we go to the break, I'll leave you with this one. True peace is not merely the absence of tension. It is the presence of justice. And friends, it's going to be a long slog until we're there. But again, the NOLA Drink Show is here to be an ally and hopefully an advocate. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to be back with our featured interview with Jennifer Kelly. Come on.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're going to stay until we soothe our soul. It takes all that long. Come on and let the good times roll.
Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it as always. Yeah, we are here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Happy to be out and about and happy to chat with our next guest. As you know, we are here with Jennifer Kelly, who is the Executive Director of the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. Jen, how are you?
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
It is. I am really happy that you are here. We were talking about this, Jen, before we went on the air, that I appreciated you showing up. We're sitting far apart like we're supposed to be doing, but this is, I've been doing shows by phone so much over the past 2.5 months that I'm glad you came out and we could do this in person. Because we were talking about how we both work from home.
Yes.
So it's nice to escape.
It's very nice to be in, number one, a beautiful place like the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and with humans in the same room that don't live with me.
Yeah. Right.
I love them, but this is fun.
This is very nice. I was just talking with my the woman who cuts my hair today, and we were talking about how she is quarantined with her boyfriend. And she was glad to get back into the salon because, you know, she was like, I think I was going to lose my mind at that point.
Yeah.
I love him, but.
Yes. I'm glad to see businesses are, you know, slowly reopening.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
This is exciting.
This is great. And you represent an organization that represents a super important segment of our economy here in New Orleans, as it is in many places, the hospitality industry. And we'll talk a little bit more about the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation in a bit. But can we maybe kind of start there? Hospitality and the hospitality industry is vital culturally and economically to the New Orleans area. Can you just kind of take us through what that means with some frame
of reference?
Absolutely.
You know, just New Orleans specifically, the metro area, you know, it's estimated that there are 100,000 people employed by hospitality and tourism. And that can be your restaurants, hotels, bars. You know, those are what we would consider hospitality. But then there's extended businesses. There are tour companies, tour guides. There are transportation companies. I mean, it's a vast amount of people that were, before COVID, employed by the hospitality and tourism that would come in and out of this city that is so heavily event-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And we are shuttered.
Right. And we're kind of moving into phase two in the state of Louisiana for reopening, and probably be a week or two behind in New Orleans. And we'll see what that looks like. Probably by the time people are hearing this, we may know what phase two actually looks like in New Orleans.
Yes, we expect to.
Right. So on an economic level, it is the most important economic segment in the city, isn't it, in the region? Now, some people say oil, but...
Yeah, it's definitely... It's because of the number of employees, first of all. So, you know, the people that are employed by the sector. And then the income as well. You know, it is the economic driver for this part of the state. And Louisiana is known for New Orleans and the wonderful things that we have here. It's not just Mardi Gras, but, you know, Mardi Gras is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the ability to host major events, sporting events. You know, we have a Superdome that can host the Super Bowl. You know, some cities just don't have those resources. And we do. And we've built an economy around that that unfortunately was shut down by, mm-hmm. you know, the need to stay at home when the pandemic was striking our area.
Right. And you mentioned all the people that work in the industry and then the transportation tour companies, some of the connected industries. But just so people out there understand, we're a lot of our hospitality industry is restaurant driven because
Huge.
We're a food culture.
Huge,
right?
Definitely.
And so we are talking about food suppliers and fishermen and
Absolutely.
Farmers and logistics people and
Yes.
people who clean uniforms and tablecloths and all that other stuff.
Yeah, the supply side of the industry is definitely taking an impact because there's no demand because of the businesses that were required to close. And then they've been phasing into reopening. So those suppliers are struggling just as much as the actual business. And like mm-hmm. you said, it could be the people that, you know, clean your floor mats, or it could be the chemicals that you use for sanitation in the kitchen. I mean, it is a lot of, it is a ripple effect. That's
mm-hmm.
the word I was looking for.
There you go. Right. Now, Jennifer, do you have a sense, either anecdotally or with any numbers about sort of do we have a read on what the economic loss has been in the past 3 months or 2.5 months?
I don't.
Okay.
And I'm
I think it's going to take some time to study.
Yeah,
well,
I'm actively reading and listening to, you know, webinars and attending Zoom meetings, and, you know, whether it's at the state level, there's a lot of task forces that have been broken out into subsections to be able to tackle all these small sections of our very diverse hospitality network. But no, I don't really have have a good handle on it. I just know it's bad. It's very bad. Mm-hmm. And because we were so dependent on an individual sector and didn't have a lot of diversity in our economy, our local economy, we're suffering differently than other parts of the country. Not to discount, you know, other people's, you know, losses, but ours is definitely significant because of the lack of diversity in the economy.
Right. So it's almost monolithic here. Yes. in a sense.
Very much so.
Is it a tough industry to kind of, especially within the folks in the hospitality industry, a tough industry to track just because of the different types of labor, how people are paid differently, right?
And There are systems in place. So the Louisiana Workforce Commission is an entity of the state, and everyone that has a job code. So, you know, if we wanted to pull data on job codes, you can do that, but then it gets, you know, segmented. So, you know, I might be the director of marketing at Galatoire's, but my job code would have marketing, not restaurant marketing.
Right.
So
okay.
If you were to just pull numbers, you know, that person would probably fall out, because why would you pull the marketing category if you're trying to get hospitality data?
Right.
But overall, you know, there are resources available. And that's where we get that number of approximately 100,000 people in this metro area working in this industry.
Right. Now, hotels, that's the biggest one, right? As
hotels,
far as number of people?
Yes. Because you know, we do have boutique hotels, but we also have massive hotels, and they are a very, you know, large employer per building. I would say outside of hotels, you know, Harrah's Casino, which is not open as the time of this recording, mm-hmm. and we should know more hopefully when this is on the air, mm-hmm. but they are obviously an attraction and part of our tourism and marketing community for New Orleans, but huge employer. It takes a ton of people to work in that building. But then right next to it is the Hilton, which happens to be the biggest hotel in the state of Louisiana.
Right.
And they are operating with an extremely thin staff right now, with most of their employees on furlough.
Okay.
So, yeah, hotels, unfortunately, are impacted in such a negative way because they'll probably take the longest to come back. And they employ so many people. So if you think about that as a long-term employment issue, you know, do those people have the ability to go get another job? Maybe. But where would they take those skills? You know, maybe housekeepers could find janitorial jobs in other industries, but maybe they can't because those people were already there.
Right.
You know, and I don't know that, you know, because we're all cleaning every day, does that change the demand for the number of people? I don't really know.
Yeah. And then offset with occupancy, you know, who's working and who's coming back. And I think you raise a really good point here because, and I think most people know this by now, you know, if you have a disaster that strikes a particular area here, we're prone to hurricanes, and I'm going to knock on wood coming into this
knock,
weekend
knock, knock.
As we're taping this. You know, people can't just pick up and, like, say you're a cook.
Right.
You can't just pick up and move to another part of the country and be a cook again because it's everybody's struggling everywhere.
So Louisiana has bounced back from other things. Hurricanes, floods, oil spill. We've got a laundry list.
Mm-mm.
Not necessarily proud of that, but we've experienced and lived through a lot and found ways to bounce back. This time we can't look for help outside of our metro or our region where we have in the past. In the past, people love Louisiana and love New Orleans and were there to help us when we needed it. I'll give you a work example. So the Hospitality Foundation was helping the people of the Baton Rouge area in 2016 when they had flooding, significant community flooding. And we got a phone call through our tourism partners in Baton Rouge that said, hey, the CVB of the Niagara Falls area would like to help.
Oh, wow.
Hey, okay. That might be the one and only donation we ever get from the Niagara Falls CBB. But we were grateful that they cared about their tourism partners in the South who were going through devastation. At this time, those type of donations aren't coming through because Niagara Falls is going to have their own pandemic issues to deal with. Exactly.
Right.
So we are in a different kind of recovery. I hope we're in recovery. I think we're in recovery. You know, this stuff comes in phases. In the past, we've been able to lean on helpful resources in other geographies, and that's just not happening this time.
Right.
We have to take care of ourselves.
Right. You made another point, too, that I'd like to kind of elaborate on here, because we're talking about recovery and the pace at which things will recover. And I think, as you noted, hotels, but I think the hospitality industry in general, is going to be slow to recover because, right, we depend on demand. That's going to depend on people wanting to come here and pay us a visit. Certainly, locals keep things happening during the summer and stuff, but it's not just like opening a retail shop and then all of a sudden the shoppers are back.
We definitely will be able to have some type of normalcy. I don't like that word, normal, but we'll have a chance to build back to prior pandemic levels of business when we are able to host travelers confidently, whether they are traveling for leisure, whether they are traveling for conventions, whether they are traveling for events. But those are the things that brought people here. And our locals are going to obviously do what we can to help ourselves, but we're really not going to thrive until those doors are truly open.
Right. And that's a lot of group travel, right? I mean, it's obviously big time convention place, but even stuff where it's a destination wedding place, it's a family reunion kind of place.
Yeah. I mean, June is Pride Month. You know, there's a lot of travel and visitation that usually comes with that we're not going to have in the month of June. So, you know, that's a huge piece of the summer economy that we were depending on, you know, we're coming out of festivals. We love our festivals. We miss our festivals, and we're probably not going to see any festivals anytime soon. And you know, the mayor in New Orleans is saying not even in 2021. I do believe that we will have some conventions before the end of the year, based on what New Orleans and Company is forecasting. They have been working very hard to retain as much business as possible. And then they also combined last year with New Orleans Tourism. So it's all one team that's working on conventions and leisure travel. And they've got a great plan, and we have a great product. So, you know, as these phases come into play and we're allowed to reopen at different levels, I think the consumer confidence will have to come next in order to have those people come to our city and bring their money.
Right. And that's certainly a question that's going to be based. That isn't just based on us. That's based on a much larger national and global
consideration. I mean, it's all about safety. You know, I hope that every decision is a safety decision.
And that's what we have to do.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, let's do this, Jennifer. Let's take a little bit of a break here on the show, and then we're going to come back. And I'd like to, after the break, let's talk a little bit about the cultural importance of the hospitality industry to the city of New Orleans. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about what the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation actually does, friends. Take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back. Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show, friends. As always, love having you here. Love being at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, where we are taping our show. And want to mention we're part of the Nitty Grits podcast network here at the museum. That's starting to ramp up. You've heard me talk about it before, and you'll hear me talk about it again. But right now we're talking with Jennifer Kelly, who is the executive director of the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. And Jen, we were talking about some of the, you know, economic stuff before as it relates to the hospitality industry. And I want to talk about culture, but let me ask you one thing I did want to ask you. And I'm not expecting you to prognosticate here, because that's always a dangerous thing. But about 2 weeks ago in one day, we were talking about hotels and sort of the bounce back, that how long it's going to take. And in one day, I read two different sources, where one source, I think, was being overly optimistic because it's their job as an organization, but was talking about, you know, maybe by the end of 2021. And then I think I remember it was maybe a Tulane professor, if I remember right, who studies tourism economics, was saying, you know, looking at more of the Katrina model and saying, no, we're talking about 5 years or 10 years. So I don't really... What is your sense? I mean, that is such a huge spread, and I know there's so many factors. I'm not asking you to necessarily make a prediction, but I just think we don't really know, do we?
I don't think we know. And the things that I've read, similar to probably the same resources that you've been exposed to, I'm leaning on the optimistic side. I try to be glass half full. And the 2021 predictions of the bounce back for specifically the hotel side of the hospitality industry is where I've seen consistency. So that feels a whole lot better than 5 years.
In 5 years or yes. 10 years, right? Yes, exactly. Right, right. Well, let's talk about the cultural import with the hospitality industry. And local listeners around here already have a sense of this. So much of how we present our tourism, this isn't going to theme parks and water slides and things like that. It's about food. It's about music. It's about our architecture. So we're presenting our culture as our main draw for tourism. Right. And so that's why there's another little linchpin in all of this, because that's what we depend on. That's the fuel for the tourism industry.
Yeah. Our product is the city. Our product is the history of the city and the culture of the city, whether it's the food, the music, the booze, you know, that all makes a beautiful, beautiful gumbo.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that's what people are coming for. And when we're not allowed to offer that, you know, I thought it was really exciting to see the pictures of Cafe Du Monde opening, you know, being an iconic food establishment right in the heart of the French Quarter. You know, that's optimism. And that is definitely marketing fodder for the message of saying, hey, we're reopening. Please come to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You know, South Louisiana has a lot of amazing things to do. We have swamp tours. I mean, you know, there's very few other places that you can have gumbo for lunch and a boat ride with alligators by your ankles in the afternoon.
Right, right.
And that sounds weird to some and amazing to others. Right. You know, and I personally think it's amazing. But, but yeah, we definitely have a product that needs to be allowed to reopen as soon as possible, as safe as possible. You know, I personally work in hospitality, but I love live music. And I'm really having a hard time thinking back about, you know, the fact that I haven't been to a setting with live music in months, and I have no idea when that will happen again. And that was one of my favorite pastimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that it, those people have no income. I mean, they're trying to reinvent themselves with, you know, tip jars online and stuff. You know, bartenders have also done that, mm-hmm. where they've created virtual tip jars and might do a, you know, cocktail class online. It's very hard to reinvent what New Orleans is, especially hoping that this is temporary. You know, universities go online. A restaurant can't go online.
Right, right.
You know, it's experiential, you know, product. It's not necessarily the same as other industries, and very, very difficult to pivot.
Right. That's a great point. And I think, you know, when you look at, I applaud people, and we've been trying to encourage people, and even done some stuff indirectly related to that with virtual stuff and things. It's difficult, right? Because we were talking about this before we went on the air, Jen, that, you know, I can make a drink at home. I go out to have a drink at bars to see my friends who are the bartenders and the servers and the cooks and everybody that works in the space, and have that camaraderie and have those conversations, maybe be introduced to a new drink or a new spirit.
Absolutely.
But the same thing with live music. I've been certainly digging, checking out the Facebook streams that people have done, and it's really cool. But it's not the same going to a club on Frenchman. It's not the same going to a bigger show. But you touch on something I think that's absolutely critical here, is that we're talking about, you know, gig employees. And, you know, technically the hospitality industry, we've kind of defined that already. But it's, we can't separate those things here, can we?
No, it's
part of the whole deal.
Absolutely. You know, the festivals, for example, you know, Louisiana has more festivals than days on the calendar. And what is the economy of a festival? Well, there has to be food and beverage.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have food and beverage, you know, you're missing a point for economy and just basic needs of the customer. You know, it's almost like basic living needs, but in a festival environment. But sanitation, safety, entertainment, construction. I mean, it all comes mixed together. And if you think about it, you could take that list of industries that come together as the festival and say that those same resources are needed for conventions. You know, and that's a big part of our hospitality industry. You've got the people that are coming to a convention that need to have that food and beverage for whatever that part of that convention is. But you also have the trade show part. So you have the construction and you have the creative, you have the business. It's just, we're a very diverse city in a non-diverse economy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And actually, it kind of leads me to the next thing that I wanted to mention. We got to take a break in about 2.5 minutes, Jen. But the people that work in the industry, and you mentioned it's directly about 100,000 or so, and we're selling our culture. Well, these are the people that are, they're the culture bearers.
They're
the ones
are.
Who that generates our cuisine, that
yes.
generates our music.
They're the people that are smiling at you when you get out the rideshare at the front door of the hotel and at the desk that give you your key, and the housekeeping people that are keeping, you know, your room clean, the hostess that smiles to you when you're seated at your dinner reservation. You know, we are the people who carry the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the customer has the experience, but the collective industry is providing that experience. The chef that created that daily special. I mean, it really is the hospitality industry.
It's an important point. I think people, it maybe sounds a little esoteric and people might go, well, yeah, but to me, it's almost like a doubly brutal here mm-hmm. in that it's such an important economic sector, but the people that work in it are the people that make it.
Yeah.
It's not like you're just going to some, like Disneyland or something.
No.
And not to pick on Disneyland, but those people that are working at Disneyland are not, they're doing a great job and they're presenting Disney, but they're not inventing the culture in the space.
Yeah, no, we embrace people that have lived here all their lives and made this a career. We embrace people who are temporarily here, maybe for education or other reason. And we also embrace people who might work in the industry temporarily because they're on a different path. Maybe you're a waitress while you're in college. You know, we embrace all of that, and we have to, or we had to. You mm-hmm. know, we're hoping that the economy can get back to where it was, but we needed that 100,000 people to fill those jobs.
Right.
We absolutely had those jobs ready and needed those butts and seats, as we say in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Right. Fair enough. Well, let's do this. Let's take a little break here on the show, and then we are going to chat further with Jen from the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. Friends, come on back.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42. Iron tub ice down full of Falstaff brew. Down yonder, down on the farm. Down yonder, where I was born. Way down yonder on the farm.
Great to be welcome back to the show, Brian D.S. Noah Drink Show. Friends, happy to have you here. We are chatting with Jennifer Kelly, the Executive Director of the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. And Jen, let's talk a little bit about what the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation does. I think there was a loose end I wanted to ask you somewhere, but we were talking during the break. That's what happens on this
show.
I'm
not going anywhere.
Yeah, okay, cool. Right on. If it comes to me, I'll ask you again. But it's such an important, obviously, I think we've established the importance of the economic segment and the importance of the people who work in it, and that's where you guys come in, right?
Yes. Our foundation was chartered in 2006. We are a 501c3 charity. And our board of directors is made up of leaders from our food and beverage industry across the state and lodging. I need to say hospitality as a whole. And then we have some other people who have interest in the industry that have joined our board as well. So with that leadership, our mission is to strengthen Louisiana's hospitality industry through the support of individuals in the community. So we really focus on the individuals of the hospitality industry. And we operate two programs so the money that comes in goes out in two ways. We support education for the industry, and that might be a school. It might be a program. Those look different.
So is it like career development, but then also running, like helping business owners as well?
It's not necessarily business support. Unless a business is looking for education. I'm sorry. Let me restart my answer.
Sure.
The education is not necessarily B2B.
Okay.
A lot of the money that we give is a traditional education environment, but that focuses on our industry. So for instance, we have lots of colleges and community colleges and trade schools that focus on our industry because we have so much hospitality in Louisiana. They're able to continue to cultivate people into our workforce. So I could summarize that with two words, workforce development.
Workforce development.
Sorry, it took me so long.
That's That's great.
So we give money to organizations that send in grant requests for support of their programs, and that looks different depending on what the school is or what the program is.
Okay.
What we do that no one else does, because even though we embrace the work we do in education, truly anybody could write a check to a school. So to make sure that we are doing something very unique to support our community, we operate what we call the Hospitality Worker Crisis Grant Program. And this is a space where, unfortunately, no one else is working and the need is great. So we have a program where people can apply to us, individuals from the hospitality industry can apply to us for financial assistance. And it's emergency based, and most of our work has been non-COVID related, go figure. Since 2006, we haven't had a pandemic. But the hospitality worker program mostly supports things that would be unexpected, like a house fire or a car accident or a medical emergency. And we also have supported families that have a death in the family and they don't have a way of burying their loved one. The way we provide that support is we give them a one-time grant through an application process, but we'll pay someone's basic living expenses such as housing. We'll do a rent or mortgage payment, utility bills, and we only do basic utilities of electric, water, and gas. We help people with medical bills and, as I mentioned, funeral expenses.
Okay. Great. So, and that's been kind of the bread and butter then, right?
That is really what we're known for. Like I said, it's the work that we're doing that unfortunately no one else is.
Right.
And we're able to give people a hand up when they really need it most.
Right. And so with the education stuff, you mentioned this, you partner with existing programs like mm-hmm. hospitality training, hotel management stuff, things yep. like that, and culinary programs.
You know, names that are familiar in the New Orleans area, University of New Orleans has a hotel, tourism. I get my letters mixed up, but it's a management program focused on the hospitality industry. Delgado has culinary and management. Nickel State has culinary and management. But there's also high schools that have a program through the National Restaurant Association called ProStart. And we're very big supporters of the ProStart schools across Louisiana. We have over 50 high schools offering a junior and senior class. It's not your old home ec. This is something very different. And it teaches not only the culinary side, but it also teaches management to people that are like 16, 17, and 18 years old. It's an amazing program.
That's really cool.
I'm really proud we're supporters of ProStart. Check it out.
Awesome, for sure. Now, on some of the crisis stuff that you mentioned too, so you guys have a big program going on, and I know you're kind of in the midst of it, so I won't make you talk about it too much because you're up to your eyeballs in paperwork, but you partnered with the United Way to assist with some yes. of the COVID stuff, right?
We actually partnered with them before
COVID,
and the way we were able to remain relevant when the pandemic hit was to take that partnership with the United Way. So in the New Orleans area, it's the United Way of Southeast Louisiana, and they cover a 7-parish area. Before the pandemic, we launched a partnership called Hospitality Cares. So it's what I was mentioning about the crisis grants, but a way to raise that money through the resources of United Way. So what we didn't say in this interview so far is that I'm the executive director and the only employee of the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation.
I wasn't going to mention unless
it's
you did.
Okay. And look, our board of directors is amazing and we have an army of volunteers, but I am the only person that is paid to do the work of our foundation. So when we launched this partnership with United Way, it was amazing because it expanded the resources to help raise money for the program and awareness. So we had that in place, and in March when, you know, it hit the fan, we had very few discussions and knew that it was the right thing to do to partner together, raise money to help the people impacted in our hospitality industry under that pre-existing brand called Hospitality Cares.
Mm-hmm.
And collectively and amazingly, and we never saw this coming, we raised $2.4 million.
Wow.
And it's being given out $500 at a time to impacted hospitality workers across that 7-parish area. And we're close to closing the program. And when it's done, we will have provided 4,885 people with $500 that can be used for basic living expenses.
Wow.
You know, a lot of it I'm expecting is going to someone's rent. You know, when you're out of work, you definitely can't lose the house over your head.
Right.
And then just this past week, it announced the city of New Orleans announced that evictions are going to be allowed to happen again. So there's no better time for people to be able to have the help of money to keep a house over their head for them and their family.
Right. Very important. So let me ask you this, Jen. You mentioned $2.4 million, I think you said.
Yes.
So where is that just individual donation? Or
it was
where
a
is this
combination. Individuals, corporations, we applied to other foundations for grants. There were retail programs. Tabasco partnered with some local restaurants, and they did fish fry programs during our Lenten season. Mm-hmm. New Orleans is a pretty Catholic city, and whether you're Catholic or not, a lot of people eat seafood on Fridays.
So I'm not, and it affects the way I eat.
Exactly. So we were able to benefit from some fundraising that, you know, other people did on our behalf. It was just an outstanding outpouring of support and the solidarity of working with a well-known organization. And we had a little bit of awareness that we were working together already, so that that baseline helped us be a trusted place for people to give their money.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that you have volunteers. So you're the only, and you've been very gracious about this, because you mentioned all these processing, all these $500 grants.
Oh,
and you're the
help.
Only employee. I was going to say, okay, good. So you guys do look for, volunteers, and you look for individual donation? And
we're definitely always looking for money. The way that this foundation has been funded historically since we were founded in 2006, we have self-funded ourselves through producing special events. And we had a calendar of events that was going to be amazing, and that got completely wiped out. So we are reinventing our own funding. We have graciously received some gifts throughout the pandemic that are not outside of the United Way program. I do want to say the United Way donations for hospitality cares, 100% of every penny went into grants for our hospitality workers.
Great.
And that doesn't happen very often. And other things that we do, 100% don't go in, because we still have to have monies to cover our
overhead, sure.
To do the work that we do. But the United Way program, every penny went to grants. So, for instance, we were a part of the Zurich Classic PGA golf tournament that got canceled in April. And through the generosity of their title sponsor, Zurich, the insurance company, they still gave $1.5 million to be distributed to charities in the area, and we're on the list. So
that's fantastic.
That's an example of how we've been able to keep money.
Okay, and a lot of great corporate support. Yeah. We got about a minute left before I have to close the portion of the radio show. Jen, tell people where they can find Louisiana Hospitality Foundation and how they can, more importantly, write you a check.
Please look us up and learn more about us at louisianahospitality.org. And we're also Louisiana Hospitality Foundation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have an email newsletter that you can sign up for on the front page of our website. You can donate on our website. And the address for a check in the snail mail is also on the website.
Great.
We will work for that money. Yeah, give me a call and tell me what we need to do.
If you need to drive by and pick it up, you'll drive by and pick it up. Socially distant, of course.
Of course.
Right. Well, Jen, thank you so much. We're going to close out the portion of the radio show. You're sticking around for another Shot with Nola Drinks, our podcast-only segment. We're going to talk a little bit more about specifics in the industry and some other really cool things. But friends, if you are listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com. Get the podcast, because that's where the action is at. But again, if you are listening on the radio, friends, now more than ever, do be kind to one another. As always, use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all. All right, everybody, have another shot with NOLA Drinks. Friends, thanks for sticking around this week. Always happy to have you here. And want to give a special shout out to our friends at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Thanks to them for hosting us. And be sure to check out the Nitty Grits Media podcast network there. It's part of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, of which the Southern Food and Beverage Museum is, of course, a part. You will find this show there and a growing list of other good shows on their podcast network. So we are happy to be a part of that and happy to be taping at the museum. We're about to send it back over to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum to continue our conversation with Jennifer Kelly from the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. Here we go. All right, everybody, another shot with NOLA Drinks. Thanks for hanging out with us, friends. As always, we are chatting with Jennifer Kelly, the Executive Director of the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation, as you know. And, Jen, let me ask you this question, because we established in the radio portion of the show that you're the sole employee of the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. How did you find yourself as the only employee? How did you find yourself in this world here?
How'd I get here? My prior employment, I worked at a marketing and advertising type agency, and the foundation was a customer, and I was overseeing some of the logistics planning and some marketing for their special events. So as I mentioned in the radio portion of the broadcast, the foundation historically has raised money through special events. We didn't typically go to the post office and find checks from people who just felt generous about giving us, you know, money. We would have to really earn it. Mm-hmm. And that's just a business model that we adopted. Other nonprofits look at me like I'm crazy when I tell them that 90-something percent of our income comes from special events. They're like, whoa, you're crazy. I'm like, no, I'm an event person. Yeah, like, that's right, my background. So I was working at the agency, was assigned to the foundation and other clients. And over the years, the foundation decided that, there was no employee at the foundation ever. First and only employee.
Board and volunteer?
Yes, it was a board operated and volunteer supported organization.
Wow. Okay.
Prior to my hiring 5 years ago.
Okay.
So the board, through a couple of years of conversation and evolution, like, is it time yet? Do we have the income stability to sustain, you know, overhead? Because they would raise money and give it away. Mm-hmm. You know, they had very little overhead. They had a few insurance policies. They had a storage unit for some of their event stuff. But it was really a low overhead organization. And technically, it still is. I mean, you know, I'm not raising it too high.
Yeah. You said you're working out of your house, so it's not like you're sitting in a high rise in the CBD.
We're pretty thin when it comes to expenses. But yeah, so that was the evolution. They were familiar with me. They were ready to make that step. The lovely man that I was working for, friend and boss at the time, was approached by them, and they asked him, like, hey, is it okay? Can we approach Jen? She's got knowledge that would be really helpful. And they trusted me, and he was awesome and said, ask Jen what's best for her and her family.
Wow.
And we're all still happy friends and people that I will keep in my network till death do us part.
Oh, that's great.
I definitely feel like it was a natural evolution that made sense from the business side of it. And then it personally made sense for me. And I definitely believe in the mission of the organization.
Okay.
Very proud of the work we do.
So you mentioned you did event stuff before. Had you actually worked in other parts of the hospitality industry?
I've never been an employee except for a 2-year stint at the House of Blues. And that job was not a hospitality job. I was the concert promoter, but we had bars, we had a restaurant, and I was in management of the building, so I was a part of the bigger whole. And I've always been a great customer to all my friends in the hospitality industry.
You know, and that's something we talk about a lot on the show, is that, you know, the biggest supporters of the hospitality industry in this part of the world is the hospitality industry.
I've always been a customer, you know, even through college when friends were temporarily bartending, I was there, you know, every night that I could to support them. I love going to restaurants where I know the staff. I love supporting our local people. I mean, this industry, it's a beautiful industry.
The people are
beautiful. The product is beautiful. And I just can't wait to see it thrive again.
Absolutely. And not to take a negative turn, but I think it's a point that's worth making, is that that's just – it's another aspect of this, because the hospitality industry supports the hospitality industry. They're a major segment of who spends money. Like, you know, you go out and have food and drinks after you get off your shift or with your peers. I've never seen it like that anywhere else on the planet that I've ever been to, where it is so self-supporting. So you're actually, by what's going on, the industry hurting so much, you're actually taking away a significant portion of your clientele.
Definitely.
In a different way.
Yeah, we definitely need to get people working so that they can support their friends.
Right,
you know,
I
know that, you know, bartenders have a lovely tradition of that. You know, if it's their day off, they're going to a friend's place. You know, they're definitely supportive. I can't wait for more phases of reopening and safety and smiles.
And smiles.
We need that.
Well, and this is what I want to ask you here. You obviously talk to a lot of people in the industry. You know, you focus on the members, the employees themselves. But we were talking between the breaks, a lot of mutual friends that you know, in other parts of the industry as well. And, you know, kind of in a broad sense way, Jen, what is your sense? I get so much. Let me ask you this way, because I get so much spread. Mm-hmm. Right, from people. Some people are actually pretty positive. Some people are pretty pessimistic. I know a lot of places aren't coming back. I know a lot of employees, for example, that are leery to go back because they're, and rightfully so, are afraid for their safety. Other people economically want to come back. Other people want to stay on extended unemployment as long as they can. And so it's kind of, I mean, are you getting what I'm getting? It's all over the map.
It's all over the place. I'm scared of what businesses don't open or open and can't sustain. I'm really, really scared. You know, our bars have been statewide closed. You know, the majority have been not allowed to be open since the pandemic hit. And then even when the decision was made to allow bars to open, that and only the ones that had the pre-existing LDH, who don't know what that is, you know, a permit from the Department of Health to serve food.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're being treated as a restaurant. They're not a bar, you know, and there are lots of watering holes that have been struggling and unfortunately are such a small business might not reopen. In fact, we, if I can plug,
please.
We were able in the radio segment, we talked about how we were helping hospitality workers with United Way. We also have a program where we're helping bar owners.
Oh, cool.
It's called the South Louisiana Bar Owner Relief Fund. It was created and seeded by a grant that we received from Crescent Crown Distributing. And have since then received individual donations as well as corporate gifts from Coca-Cola United and William Grant & Sons. And that has put together over $200,000 that we are distributing in grants to bar owners that are suffering because they still have rent to pay. They still have electric bills. They still have dumpster bills. They have insurance. You know, I just recently learned how much it costs just to file your ATC permit, your liquor license. And all of that is starting to come up for renewal. So these business owners are struggling. And I'm grateful that we did have a platform to help a small segment of on the B2B side.
Mm-hmm.
We might be out of money. Like, we're right there. The number of applications versus what we have to process versus the amount of money, we're right there. So if anybody listening wants to help us help more bar owners, that would be a great gift.
Okay, we'll make sure, and I'll get that information. We'll put that in the show notes on the website. If there's a specific link or something, I'm happy to connect with that. When talking to people that are members of the industry itself, is it kind of the same thing? Are you getting a lot of mixed bag about emotions and
definitely
safety?
Definitely mixed bag. Some people are afraid to go back to work because of safety concerns, or not necessarily for themselves, but for the household that they manage. You know, maybe they have an elderly, you know, family member that is within the home and they're really afraid to go out, bust their butt. You know, I'm sorry, I can say ass, bust their ass and, you know, come home and potentially, you know, taint the household. You know, that's a big responsibility for some of our hospitality workers. And so many of our workers live at or below the poverty line. It does not surprise me that that is happening here in our community because there are more people living in that household than in other parts of the city or other parts of the country. So, you know, that's just one simple example of, you know, fear of going back to work in the current state of affairs. Whereas other people just can't wait to get back to work, can't, you know, have no other possible ways to cover the bills and will do whatever it takes and love their job so much. You know, so it really is, it's all over the place.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that point up, too, about people below the poverty line, because people have probably, certainly people here in Louisiana and in the area have heard this, that we know that the the COVID pandemic has been unequally striking African-American
yes.
populations. And in a lot of cases, that's what we're talking about here, people living below the poverty line. And therefore, you have multi-generational households.
Yep.
And then you have just what you said, people that are in higher risk groups.
Definitely.
And a lot of people that are indicative of that or in those demographics are people that work in the hospitality
yep.
industry.
It's a huge percentage. Yeah. Mm. It's something that, you know, makes our work more relevant. It helps us tell the story when we're fundraising that this is the community that we represent. Mm-hmm. There is data for all of that, you know, obviously pre-pandemic data,
sure.
but we have data to show it's systemic, not only in Louisiana, but in the country. But it's unfortunate that it hits our industry so hard right here in the New Orleans area.
Yeah, right. Let me ask you one different question before we close out the podcast only segment. We were talking about, and I know this isn't what the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation does, but we were talking about, you know, sort of what tourism is going to look like and adaptations that people are making. And you and I were talking offline about conversations that we've had with mutual friends in the industry and things like that about what they're looking at, say restaurants, mm-hmm. what's economically viable for them. Are
yeah.
they going to have to change the business model and
yeah.
some things like that? And you're very well connected to folks in the tourism promotion
mm-hmm.
industry here, our friends at New Orleans and Company, the artist formerly known as the Convention and Visitors Bureau,
yes.
which is now merged with the New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Corporation. So now they're just the tourism people.
Right.
I'm just going to call them the tourism people.
They are the tourism people, and we love them.
Wait, there you go, exactly. And a couple of them have been victims and been on the show before, speaking to you, Jeremy Cooker and Christian Sonia.
Yeah.
Some interesting things have come out, and I've heard people talking about, we talked with Robert LeBlanc about this on the show a few weeks back, you know, maybe needing to lower the per head cost, needing to look at some different things, maybe continuing some amount of food service
mm-hmm.
Between lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
Just, you know, looking at all kinds of different things. And one of the things that that I know people are talking about in the industry, and you mentioned this, looking to that maybe kind of summertime model, as I was describing it to you, of the regional car traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something to me that I think is very interesting because, you know, like we were talking about, we wanted to get the hell out of the house.
Yes.
And this is a good way for people to, you know, pack the fam in the car and take
yes.
a drive.
My understanding is that our tourism plan for the city of New Orleans is focused on drive markets. So maybe 4 to 6 hours away, you know, if you draw a circle, maybe Houston to Florida, you know, get those people to realize we're open, we're ready, we're excited, we're safe, we're doing everything we can to provide you an escape. So come on over to New Orleans. That's where the New Orleans and Company is reporting that they're putting all their resources. And our businesses are excited to have that plan, to support that plan. I know that sales and marketing directors within restaurant groups and hotels are chomping at the bit for the video snippets and things that we can all push out collectively to say, hey, New Orleans is here. Come on, mm-hmm. come support us. Which would therefore bring the people and the money and allow our businesses to bring back more staff as the demand comes on, you know, especially the hotels. I know that's where we started our conversation at the very beginning. The hotels are likely the last to come on at any normalcy because it's truly demand driven.
Volume driven.
And volume, yes, right. Very much so.
Right.
You know, I would love to say, hey, let's get them through the airport too. But the reality is that it's going to come back through drive markets before fly markets.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I promise you that was the last question, but I lied.
I have
one more question for you. Because we've obviously been talking a lot about the effects of tourism
yep.
as it relates to the hospitality industry. But there's a significant part of the hospitality economy that exists in the city that's not tourism driven. So I'm talking about like the neighborhood bars
yeah.
I think we were getting at
oh, yeah.
and some of the neighborhood restaurants and things like that. What's your sense there? I mean, locals want to get out and support, right?
Yeah.
But there's still barriers, I think. Of course.
Well, absolutely. I mean, until people are working and have, you know, a steady flow of income, you know, will they have any of that to be disposable? And a certain segment will. So we're taping on... I don't want to time this, but you know, this week
sure.
when we
right.
were taping, there was a big citywide fundraiser called Give NOLA Day. And if this doesn't put a pep in your step, I don't know what will. On Give NOLA Day, which is a 24-hour day of giving, we do it once a year, 800-ish nonprofits all asking the community for donations. And it's a $10 minimum. You know, it's really approachable. On the day, on Give NOLA Day, the program broke its own record. Last year, it raised $5.7 million. This year, it's over $7 million.
Yeah.
They raised a million more.
Yeah, a million
in the middle
plus more,
of yeah. a pandemic and an economic downturn, possible recession. I mean, it's so optimistic. It gives me optimism to know that the community still has the ability and interest of supporting nonprofit. And if you think about it, nonprofits exist to make the community better.
Right.
So it really just, I mentioned pep in my step. It gave me hope this week when I saw the response. We personally didn't beat our fundraising from last year, but we almost did. We were right on the cusp
That's
of
amazing,
it. And
that, really.
We had no idea. I mean, we went into it with there is no budget. Anything above zero is a win.
Right.
You know?
And especially losing your main.
Oh, absolutely. And we just didn't know.
Right.
And for people to have the resources, that gives me hope that locals will still be able to support local businesses. I just don't know how long. How long will we be responsible to carry that on our shoulders of keeping our small businesses and, alive and keeping those jobs open? But we need to do everything we can to support locally.
Sure.
If you got the means.
And we do have a history of that here.
Yeah,
The track
do.
Record is strong.
Yeah, we do.
Jen, thanks so much. Before I let you go, tell people again where they can find the foundation online and where they can give.
We are LouisianaHospitality.org. We are Louisiana Hospitality Foundation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if I could give two plugs,
please.
Since this is a drink show.
Yes.
And we have two drink fundraisers happening right now.
Yes.
Booze in your life. Help the Hospitality Foundation with booze. So the first one is a lovely company called Neat Wines, N-E-A-T. And their website is neatwines.com. They have a program where all of their retailers are selling their wines and giving a dollar of every bottle to the Hospitality Foundation.
Oh, great. Okay.
So if you go to their website, there's a list of stores all over the state of Louisiana. Some are grocery stores, some are liquor stores, but it's just very accessible. And then if you go to those stores, there's usually a little paper tag around the neck of the bottle that says, buy this bottle, and a dollar goes to LHF. So that's awesome.
Cool.
And then our friends at the Sazerac House, which is a lovely booze museum that I highly recommend people get to whenever we can get in there. They are doing virtual tasting events, and they have found a way to reinvent themselves and to stay present and share the knowledge of their bartenders with the community. These virtual tastings are free to watch. But if you so choose to purchase one of their drink kits, or they call them a cocktail kit, a portion of those proceeds come to the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. And they're promoting that on their Facebook page and doing the videos through their Facebook page. And they have a calendar of events with different cocktails. So maybe one night it might be how to make a traditional daiquiri or the ever so popular Sazerac. But you can learn and support LHF all at the same time. So
Very cool.
For letting us plug the booze, friends.
Absolutely. And that'll all be in our show notes, friends. We'll have links to all that stuff. So if you didn't catch it, to write it down now, we will have those links there for you on the website. Jen, thanks so much. I appreciate it. It was good to
Thank
see you again.
Thank you. Happy to be in person.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, friends, brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it, as always. Thanks to Jennifer Kelly from the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation for joining us. And once again, a special shout out and thanks to our friends at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum for hosting us. They are currently closed to the public, depending on when you're hearing this. I believe the goal is, if it's possible, they want to try and open on June 15th. Not sure if that's going to happen. I know they've been getting the museum ready to allow proper social distancing, removing some of the interactive stuff so people aren't touching surfaces and stuff like that. So we'll keep you apprised of that, but do go check them out. They are at 1504 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, and you can find out more at southernfood.org. Again, southernfood.org, Southern Food and Beverage Museum, 1504 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. They're in Central City of New Orleans. Certainly, friends, troubling times facing this country, the United States, and facing the world. But I hope also a positive time, or at least that we'll be finding positivity from what's happening now, and that real change will actually be affected. So many things to talk about reforming the police, racial equity, economic opportunity, education, so many things here. And kind of just continuing on from what I said at the top of the show, when I was trying to think of something to say for this parting shot. And believe me, these are ongoing conversations that we will continue to have on the NOLA Drink Show, obviously with a lens coming from food and drink and culture, because that's what we do here. But obviously, these things connect strongly, even just what we talked about on the show today in regards to those things, food, drink, and culture. Racial inequality plays out, manifests in the hospitality industry, in the food world, the drink world, obviously, as it does anywhere else, maybe even more so in many cases. And again, here at the NOLA Drink Show, we will continue to bring you those conversations. And as I said at the top of the show, hopefully not only as an ally, but as an advocate. But I wanted to simply leave you with a very powerful quote from Thurgood Marshall, which I think is obviously still very, very relevant today. And he said this: "We cannot play ostrich. Democracy just cannot flourish amid fear. Liberty cannot bloom amid hate. Justice cannot take root amid rage. America must get to work. In the chill climate in which we live, we must go against the prevailing wind. We must dissent from the indifference. We must dissent from the apathy. We must dissent from the fear, the hatred, and the mistrust. We must dissent from a nation that has buried its head in the sand, waiting in vain for the needs of its poor, its elderly, and its sick to disappear and just blow away. We must dissent from a government that has left its young without jobs, education, or hope. We must dissent from the poverty of vision and the absence of moral leadership. We must dissent because America can do better, because America has no choice but to do better." Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you. Be well.